So, hi, good afternoon, right after lunch, so I hope everybody ate enough. Welcome to this session about Windows Azure Mobile Services. Nick already touched the surface this morning a little bit during keynote. The idea about this session is to go into more depth and to see what you can do with this amazing technology, new feature added in Windows Azure. People around here already working with Windows Azure, already looked at Windows Azure Mobile Services? Anybody? Few hands, so I will be able to show you a few cool stuff, a few cool things. So I don't have a lot of slides. I'm going to do a lot of live coding. I'm going to build a Windows 8 app directly connected to Windows Azure Mobile Services to show you how you can get started, what you can do with it, and so on, so that you can immediately take it back home and start playing around with it. So who am I? I'm Christoph. I work at Fembreda, which is one of the biggest insurance brokers in the Benelux. I'm also part of the Microsoft Extended Experts team. We recently changed our logo and the website. So if you have a question about any technology, Windows 8, Windows Azure, anything related, just feel free to get in touch. Send us an email, drop us a message on Twitter. We are here to help, so feel free. I'm also part of the Windows Azure user group here in Belgium. So we organize every month session around topics like this, more in depth about what can you do with Windows Azure, how can you bring it to your own company, how can you start working with it. So feel free to drop me a message if you want some more info. So topic about today, agenda. Globally situating Windows Azure Mobile Services. So a little bit related to what Nick showed you this morning. How you start with your new mobile service, but a little bit more in depth, talking about how do you get your data from the cloud into your app. So whether it's a Windows 8 app, Windows Phone app, an iOS app, or coming also Android apps. A little bit about authorization authentication, how do you integrate your app with Twitter, for instance, which is I'm going to show you. Notifications, which is built in right into the operating system. A nice feature to bring data from the internet back to your client to show you tile updates, to show you notifications for your user with amazing content. And then a little bit to end up to show you if you have such a mobile service running on the internet, what do you do if you have some problems? I will show you what happens if I have, for instance, an issue. Where do I start looking for? Where are my logs? What can I do with it? So to start off, Windows Azure Mobile Services. What is it? It's newly added to Windows Azure since September 2012, so it's brand new. It's still in preview, but you can already use it. So it has a lot of different components, like you see here. So one of the cool things, you have authorization, authentication inside. There is server-side logic, which I will show you. Notifications, of course, so support for all types of devices, so you can send notifications to Windows Phone, to Windows 8, but also to iOS and coming to Android. The logging, the data, I will show you in more detail, and of course, scalability, what Azure is all about. So you have some server available running your data, you need more because you have a lot of users. How can you scale it? What can you do with it? So that's what Windows Mobile Service is about, connecting the cloud to your mobile device. So three key scenarios which you can take into account if you want to start building apps with Windows Azure Mobile Services. Of course, it's suited perfectly for mobile apps. So Windows Store apps, Windows Phone apps, Android, like I already said. And common scenarios which you always see in apps, which you always have to do repeatedly, you have to do it for every app over and over again, is authentication. So nowadays, when you start up an app, you have the possibility to integrate, to authenticate to Facebook, to Twitter, to Live ID, Microsoft account, after it was renamed. So it's stuff you always have to do over and over again. So this was also the idea of mobile service, to give you a possibility to do that in a more easy way, to support you in doing that. Of course, notifications, which is also a core concept, out of the box, available for you, few lines of code, and up and running. And then the last one, which is also important, Nick showed you this morning, in 2 minutes, he was able to set up a mobile service, a Windows 8 app, and they were communicating, and everything was working. So you don't need a lot of time to get started. So if you want to start up with a Windows 8 app, and you want to have a look at mobile data, it's really fast to get started with, pretty fast to get a concept ready for your customers to demo, and you're up and running in a few days. So, first demo of the day, setting up a mobile service. So first thing I do, I have to shut down my presentation. So the portal, the Windows Azure portal, I hope everybody already saw it. So a lot of things you can do here. What Nick showed you this morning is if you go to mobile services, you can create a new one. What I will be doing, I will start by creating a new database to show you that when you create a new mobile service, what Nick did was he just said, okay, create for me a new database and let it auto-generate. I will start from creating my own SQL Azure, SQL database in the cloud, which is normally what you're going to do. You're going to have some database available with some data and you want to get started with that. So we create a new SQL database. We give it a name. I call it AppDay. You choose your collation. I choose my subscription. I create a new server because I don't have any server yet. I will add a login. I can pick my region where I want to put it. I'm going to put it in West US. Why? I can choose Europe, but the mobile service currently, because it's in preview, you can only choose the US to host it currently. So to have some better speed, I will use my, I put my server there as well. And I flag allow Windows Azure services to access the servers. Okay, I create, and now my database is going to be created. So what is Azure going to do for me? It's going to provision a new SQL server, server for me, server instance, and it's going to add a new database which I called AppDay. So I'm not sure whether you noticed, but it's already online. So it's pretty quick. It's really, really fast to get started with. It's up and running. I have now 1 gigabyte of SQL database available online. To show you that you can also use your management tools which you used to work with, like SQL Management Studio, from your machine, I'm going to connect through that server through SQL Management Studio. So what do I do for that? I go to servers, I pick my server, and I need to open up the firewall to get into that machine, into that instance. So in configure, you see that I can here change my allowed IP addresses, where I put my firewall rules. One I will not do, which I don't encourage to do you, but which I will add now is this one. Don't do that on a live system. I could have called that rule hack me as well, because it's now open to everybody on the complete internet. So if I go back to the dashboard, I copy my public URL for this database. I can connect, remove some extra stuff. So only the name. I log into what did I create as an administrator? My administrator logon, my password, and it should connect. So it's now connecting through SQL in the cloud, and this is what we are going to use as a base for our mobile service. So while it's connecting, I'll go back and do exactly the same as Nick done before. I create a new mobile service. I give it a name, call it AppDay. It will check whether this doesn't exist yet. I'm lucky. I use an existing database, I put it on my MSDN subscription, I put it in the West US. I choose my database server, my login, I enter my password, and my mobile service is getting created using my existing database. Now, why is this interesting to do it like this? Is if you create multiple mobile services using the same SQL server and the same SQL database, what it will do is it will use the name of your mobile service as a schema of all the tables inside that database. So that means that you can use one database for multiple mobile services, and based on the schema, it will make some sort of separation between the tables. So my mobile service is ready. This should also be ready. So if I expand databases, I have database AppDay, tables, none. So that's the next step, what we're going to do. And that's also the next step when we're working with data. I will show you what you can, how you can go further. So let's step back to the slides and continue with data. So the idea is, if you have a mobile app, of course you want data in your application. So how does it work in mobile services? You have your SQL database, structured storage, and like I already said, it's partitioned by schema. So if you have multiple mobile services, you will see multiple schemas. And now I'm managing my data through SQL Management Studio, which I like the best. But if you want to, you can also manage it through the SQL portal. So there is a portal in Windows Azure, which shows you a user interface where you can manage your database, where you can create tables, insert data, select data, write queries. And if you want to, you can also use the REST API, which is also available to interface with that API and to send some data, to get some data back and forth by doing gets and posts. So you have a lot of ways. I'm currently going to use the SQL Management Studio way. Once we have data, we can also start adding server-side logic. You would say, why server-side logic? It's a mobile service. It's more or less the Node.js principle, where you can write server-side JavaScript-like code, which will be run when the service is called to persist or to read data from the service. I will write some of those. So another nice feature which you see, the second one, is dynamic schema off or on, which means that I don't have to create my columns in my tables up front. I can just work with classes in my code like I'm used to. I can create a new class, add some fields, add some properties to it, persist it into an existing table. A table has to exist, and it will create the columns automatically for me using the correct type. I will show you as well. And by intercepting the CRUD operations, so the insert and the update, delete, and read, I can add some extra functionality. I will do that as well. And there are a few things which we have available server-side to work with your mobile service. So if you want to execute a custom query, you can do it like this, using MS SQL, the global function which is available. But of course there's so much more, like for instance the requests, the console if you want to write some logging. I have some code about that. Push is also server-side, so I'm going to add push notifications in one of my next steps. So this is also done server-side in server-side script. And also status codes, if you, for instance, want a certain operation to return a different HTTP code, you can use the status codes and return it like that. So how is it mapped from the type of the API to the SQL type? So on one side you have JSON, on the other side you have the T-SQL type. It's pretty simple. The Boolean is a bit daytime is daytime offset, so the mapping is done for you. You don't have to take that into account. So, working with data, first thing you do is, of course, I don't have any tables, so I'm going to follow the same structure as Nick did, so using that to-do app, but I'm going to extend it further. So I'm going to create the to-do item table, and I'm going to download the C# client, and that one we are going to extend further on. So it's a pretty good example if you want to get started with that. So I'll put it in my projects. Like that, and I start Visual Studio. So if I now go back to my SQL Management Studio and I refresh my table list, you will see that there is indeed an update.todoItem, which is the table I named, plus update was the name of my mobile service, so that's the schema where my table is in now. And if I expand it and if I go and look at the columns, you see that it only has one column, which is there by default, which is of course the primary key, the ID. And you can, it's not the ID that you manage that yourself, it's done for you. It's currently set to identity as well. So I have the app, it's running in Visual Studio, my sharper expired, okay. And that's all there is to it. Now, if I start up this app, to first show you that it is indeed working, let's hope that it's indeed working, it should. Very nice startup icon. I can add to do, hit save. And if I now go back to SQL Management Studio and I select from this table, SQL Management Studio Express even, so it's a little bit limited in functionality. you'll see that it contains my ID, and suddenly it added two columns, text and complete. So I didn't do anything for that, because by default, dynamic schema is enabled. So that means that if I add properties to my classes, that also those columns with the correct types will be added for me. So if I refresh my column list here, you see that the text has been put to an envarchar and complete is a bit. And if I go and look in the code how that looks like, there is a main page, and that contains the class to-do item by default with a property of ID, an integer, and it adds also two data member properties, text and complete. You'll notice that I will get some notifications now and then. The reason why is because if I disable them, my push notification demo will not work. So this is basically just a class. And how do you work with that? The first thing you do in the app.xaml, what it does is you register your mobile service client. Can everybody read it at the back? Or do I need to put it bigger? Bigger? Better?
Yeah.
So first thing, you register your mobile service client. You give it the name, the endpoint you have, plus the application key generated for you, which is the way it knows that it's you. So the authentication part. So that's all you need to write here. And then here as well. So I have the class to-do item with all my properties. And for instance, if I refresh, it's going to ask to-do table dot where give me all the to-dos which are not complete and bind them to my list view, which is in this case showing me a list of all the to-dos. If I insert a new one, I say to-do table dot insert async and I add it to my list of to-dos. So how does that to-do table look like? You ask your mobile service for a reference to that table, and from that moment on you can work with that table, insert, update, delete from it using objects straight from your code. It's sending it to REST to your service, and at behind the scenes it's doing all the rest you need to do. Now I told you about the service side part, so how do we work with that? So if you look into data, we see that it has table to do item. If I click it, I can of course browse it through this user interface. I cannot add columns here, but I can look what is in this table, which might be handy. But of course I can go to script, and in script you see that I have a way to change my insert scripts or to change my delete scripts. So what I will do to show you that it's, how it works is to say to my item, which is currently the to-do item which is coming in, I can for instance say, okay, create an add when I insert this new date. Remove some of those messages. And when I go to update, I can say was changed on new date. Save. So what I did now is I just going to put the current date into a new property which I added. Column doesn't exist, property doesn't exist in code, and when I run the application, you will see that it's indeed going to add those automatically adding data. So I start my application, I add a new to-do, I go to my SQL Management Studio and I which is better. And you see that I created it, I inserted it, so we added created add. I didn't have to do anything else for that. If I now mark it as completed, you'll see that it indeed added the last changed on with the current date. So that's pretty cool, right? So what else can I do? Of course, if I now say, when I'm inserting, I want to make sure that I'm validating the length. So here I can say, for instance, if item.text.length bigger than 10, request response status codes dot that requests, if I'm correct. This one I always forget. Save. So you can also do server-side validation if you want to. So now what will happen is if I call this API and the link is not correct, it will just send me back, okay, you cannot do this. This is wrong. I can also send some errors with it. Then of course I have to catch it in my application, and you can add validation whatever you want, and that's where the global variables of status codes and everything is going to put into place. So for the rest on data part, there isn't much to say. There is that's all there is to it. Of course, if you have already an existing database with your data in, with columns, with tables, you can of course start using it as well. Even I'm not really that a script guy, but if you want to, if you have some objects linked to each other and you have tables with foreign keys and references, you can also include it here, and you will get the object with his references, with a list of references into this script, and you can start working with it and take corrective actions if you want to, doing batch updates, inserting childs, stuff like that. But getting into this. The scripts might seem a little bit strange in the beginning, it's true, but it's currently the only way you can do it. It might change in the future. So this is data. I'm going to go back to the slides and quickly talk a little bit about authentication. Because why is it important? Yeah, every app, you want to secure it. You want a way for users to be able to log into it, to provide their credentials, and to show them, who am I? So you can use Live, Windows Live, you can use Twitter, Facebook, out of the box, I will show you. And extra, you can put per table which exists in your mobile service, you can specify what level of security needs to be applied. Or it can be accessed by everybody, it can be accessed by users which are having the application key, which means the key you saw when I defined my mobile service, or you can even say, no, it has to be an authenticated user. And that's what I'm going to use. So again, demo. So what I will do, I will go to my page of my mobile service. There's an identity tab. And there you see that you can specify your Microsoft account settings, your Facebook settings, your Twitter settings, or your Google settings. So I will be doing Twitter. So the first thing I need to do is I need to register this application on Twitter. So I logged in already at dev.twitter.com, where I can register new apps. So I create a new application. I call it AppDay. Needs to be long enough. You see, you have to provide a website. And important here is the callback URL, which is normally what is used when you log into Twitter. Twitter will redirect you back to your URL, which is normally on the web. It's your own site. Now, in this case, we're doing it from Windows 8 app, so the redirection is going to be called by Windows 8 and it's going to do something with it. So for this to work, don't forget to put a callback URL in here. The first time I was playing around with it, I forgot it, and it took me quite some time to figure out why my authentication was not working, just because I didn't put the callback URL. So what do you have to fill in when working with mobile services? You have to fill in the URL of your mobile service. So in this case, this one. You have to accept this, then enter a very nice captcha. Okay, and now I should have a Twitter app. So what did Twitter do now? It generated some OAuth settings, my consumer key, and my consumer secret. So by using that from my application, I can authenticate to Twitter. Twitter will do authentication, it will yield a token, it will send the token back to my application, and from that moment on, my application knows that token and can pass back forth that token and say, I'm authenticated by Twitter, so you have to trust me, it's me. So back to our mobile service, back to the identity tab. What does it ask for Twitter? It asks consumer key, consumer secret. Great, so consumer key, consumer secret, save. So from our mobile service point of view, it has been authentic. The authentication is put in place. So, and now what I'm going to do is I'm going to change the authorization on data side. So I go to data, to do item, permissions, and these are the four permissions which we already saw on the slides. So or it's everybody, or it's everybody with the application key, or it's only authenticated users. So I will change it to authenticated users. I will save it. And if I now go back to my app, what should happen? It's going to give a not authorized, so I get back the HTTP response. Yeah, you're trying to use this service, why is it trying to refresh my to-dos? I'm not authorized, so I'm getting back HTTP unauthorized. So I now need to write a little bit of code to first authenticate to this service. So I've put a little snippet here. Okay, I will go into detail about it. So what do I do? I have add an authenticate method, and I'm just going to do it in a while. As long as there is no user available, I'm going to call the mobile service.loginAsync. You give your authentication provider, in this case Twitter, but as you can see, you can add here Google, Facebook, so it's an enumeration. So I use Twitter. If I don't get an exception, I'm logged in and I can ask for the user ID. If I don't log in, I'm going to show a message box. I'm going to show a message box either way. So yes, and then I need to include this type, but why doesn't it work? Using pop-ups. And then, of course, I need to call this authenticate method, and I'm going to do that in the unnavigated to, which means that every time I'm navigated to this app, it's going to refresh the to-do items. So this is the first operation which is going to be called. So I'm going to call authenticate here. So this should work, but there's a small issue with it. So the authenticate method, I defined it as async, so it can run asynchronously. If I don't wait this method, if I don't await it, it will call it asynchronously, run in the background, and immediately call the refresh to-do items. So even though I added authentication, it will still crash. So a good tip here is to await until authentication is done. And of course, I also need to make this method also async, so that it will wait until the authentication is done, and then only refresh the to-do items. So I'll put, you'll see, I'll start the app. It's now going to trigger the authentication, do a login async. Should do. Just probably. Oh. So you see that it's going to show you the known Windows 8 authentication pop-up connecting to a service. So in this case, it's showing me the Twitter, and Twitter is asking, yeah, are you sure you want to authorize the update 2012 application to access your data? So I need to log in with my Twitter account. It's going to call the callback, and now I receive this pop-up. I receive the user object, the mobile service user, with ID, Twitter, and then a number. So from now on, I can start creating to-dos again and working with it. I can call my API again. So now pretty cool. So I showed you already to add a created add and a last updated on field to the to-do item. Now that I have a knowledge, notion of user, I can also add who did it, who created it. So we go back to the script, and on insert, to remove this, not need it anymore, I can say item.userid equals user.userid. So you see that one of the parameters which is passed into the insert method is the user object. If authentication is enabled, it will contain my user object. If it's not, then it will be null. It will be empty. So in this case, it will be there. So I put it in the user. And if I now run my app again, oh, it's still running, and I add a new to-do, even without restarting the application was still running. If I look into my SQL Management Studio to all the columns, you see that it added the user ID, and now this item has been created by my Twitter. So authentication works, I know who created this item, so I'm ready to go. So what else can I do? Now that I know who created an item, I can of course change the read operation to only return the items I created. Because we're creating a to-do app, so you can say here, you get a query object, you get a user object and a request. So in the query object, I can add extra conditions. So for instance, query.where, small letter, and I add user ID, user.user ID. So I'm now limiting the results the query is going to give back to only the to-dos for this user. Because I know I need to be authenticated before I can use my app, I store the user ID every time I create a new to-do. So every time I read to-dos, I only take the ones for the user I'm authenticated with. Pretty difficult to show because I only have one user, so, but trust me, it works. So from a data point of view and authentication, this is the only thing you need to do. So I did it for Twitter. If I want to do it for Facebook, I want to do it for Google, it's exactly the same. But creating a new Twitter app is the fastest, the most easy thing to do. So that's why I showed you Twitter. So, but you don't need to do anything for that. It's out of the box. If I want to do exactly the same on my iOS or on my Windows Phone 8 application, it will work exactly the same. So that was authentication and a little bit authorization to make sure that I only see the to-dos I am entitled to. So what's next is every time I create a to-do, I want to make sure that everybody is using the application also receives a notification saying, yeah, this guy, he added a new to-do. Perhaps you should take a look at it. So how does it work? What it uses behind the scenes is the Windows Notification Service, which is available for free. You can use it, you can send notifications through it, and it will deliver it to any platform which is compatible with it. So that means currently Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, and Windows Phone 7 is still using the old version, so it's not working. But iOS is currently already supported, and Android is coming. So how does it work? Every time you have your app and your mobile service, the blue ones, are the ones you manage yourself. You set it up, you develop it, you're owner of those, and the green ones are managed for you. So when you're starting up your app, the first thing you're doing is registering to the operating system, to the client saying, this is me, I want to listen for notifications. I'm interested in notifications. What it's going to do is, it's going to, every time your app does something to your mobile service, fetching data, setting data, doing an action, it's up to you to decide. It's a mobile service, so it's going to send to the Windows push notification service, hello, this happened. And it's the Windows push notification service who is going to communicate back to the notification client platform inside Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8 to deliver that notification to the user. So what type of notifications can you have? You can have a toast, you can have a tile and a badge. I will show you tile and toast, badge is the same. And what you need to do for that is you need to register to the portal. You get a client secret again, a package ID, and using that client secret is going to negotiate the notifications. So, wow, this is small. This is the list of all the support notifications, if you want to. So, yeah, all the ones are there. So there's tile, there's toast. But of course, yeah, the ones who saw some other sessions about the tile templates, for every template, there is one method here which you need to call, and then the notification service knows how it needs to look like. So you need to provide a message, an image, and it's going to use a template you specify by using the method. The one I will be using is the send tile square text 01, which is just a tile notification, and then the other one, send toast text 01, which is a simple toast notification. So, demo. Back to building a notification. So back to our portal. So you see there is also a tab push. And on push, you need to enter a client secret and a package SID. So first thing I need to do for push notifications to work, I need to register my Windows 8 app on the Windows 8 developer center, so for Windows Store developers. So I am going to submit a new app. I'm going to register a new one. So I give it a name, which is called AppDay. This is required. So you need to have an account, you need to have a store token before you can use the notification service. So my app has been published, and now this is the only thing I need to do. I created a new Windows 8 app ready to be submitted. And the second site I need to go to, this is the first one, the Windows Store Developer Center. I need to go to the Live Connect Dev Center. Why is there a different site and why can I not manage it here? Because I'm now creating Windows 8 app, but if I would be creating an iOS app or an Android app, I don't want to go to the store, the Windows Store platform to register an app because it's not a Windows Store app. So that's why it's separate. So I go to the Live Connect, where I can hook up my application to the notification service. There is a tab, My Apps, and you see by adding in the Windows Store, it also added new app here automatically. And it generated an ID. So this is step one. You register your app on the portal and you're up to go. Now I need to link my project in Visual Studio, my app locally on my machine, to this instance, to this registered app online. So how do I do that? I go to Visual Studio, I right click my project, I select the menu Store, Associate App with the Store. I need to sign in. You cannot say remember me for some reason, so you need to do it every time. So it's fetching the list of all the apps I've registered on my store, on my portal. I select AppDay, the only one I have. Next, and it's going to associate, so it's going to add a package name and publisher ID into this app, so that in case I really want to publish it to the store and get it certified later today, which I will do because it's a great app, I can immediately do it. So I have to package it, I can upload it, and the process is ready. So associate, and you'll see that it's added in Visual Studio, it added a new item, the store association and the store key. So every time I'm now going to publish this package to the store, it uses that key to encrypt, to hash my contents, so that it knows that it's me who created the package. So that's the first thing I need to do. Then I go back to the portal, I open this application, and now I need to find my client secret and my package SID to link into my mobile service so that it can send push notifications. So I go to Edit Settings, API Settings, and you see here I find my client secret. I paste it in here. I find my package SID, paste it in here, and I save. And now my mobile service, oh yes, has been set up for push notifications. We saw earlier on the slides that from in a code on my client, I also have to register to my local notification manager so that the operating system will receive the notification. But of course, my client needs to know about it. It needs to be able to handle it. So how do I do that? Pretty simple code. This one, I put it in the... So I'm going to create a new push notification channel. I'm going to ask the push notification channel manager to create push notification channel for application async again. And I'm going to await it and I'm going to get it back in a variable called current channel. And now, because I'm going to send the notifications from the server, so in a server-side script, what I need to do is I need to know that channel, the URL where I need to push the notification to, I need to know it server-side. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to store the URL of my channel in a table in my mobile service. So how do I do that? I add a new entity, channel. I add it here in the same place. Every time that I'm acquiring the push channel, where I'm going to do that, every time my app is launched, acquire push channel, I'm going to do that. In this case, I don't await it. Why? Because I need to do the authentication anyway. The authentication is going to take some time. So in the meanwhile, in the background, it can register my channel, save it, do whatever it wants to it. I don't have to wait for it. It's not important for my app to wait on it. It will run in the background anyway. And every time I have my channel, I will save it in a table. So Discorder you already saw, so I'll ask my mobile service, give me the table channel, add a new channel object with property URI to the channel URI, and insert it asynchronously. So this should be it, except I need to still create my channel table, so that's the only thing the mobile service doesn't do for you. It adds columns for you, it manages your schema dynamically, but it doesn't create tables. So I go to my mobile service, data, I say create, and I call it channel. So now it will create a channel table, and I should be able. To select it, so it currently only has an ID. So my table is ready, I can start working with it. Now it's up and running, I'm free to go. Every time my app will start up, it will register this channel in my table, great. But it's not that cool, because what I want to do is I want to make sure that every channel only exists once in my table. So because now in this case I'm just going to insert every time my app starts up. So every time my app registers, it will receive the same notification URL, because it's the same app, it has the same credentials, the same store key. So it will give this me back the same callback URL, and I'm going to register it over and over again. So this is also the place where these data scripts come into play. So I go to channel table, I go to script, to the insert, and I'm going to replace the insert by this piece of code. What is it doing? It's going to ask the channel table. It's going to check, is there a channel, is there a record? It's going to do a select a read from the table for the URI of my item which enters into my insert operation. It's going to read it, and if the read is successful, it's going to call this method, insert channel if not found. It gets the list of all the existing channels. If there is one channel found, it means that there was a channel for that URI already existing in my table. Then it's going to say request response HTTP 200 with the first channel, so that in case somebody requests the insert, then it just gets back a response, hey, this channel already exists, this is the channel I found. If not, then it's going to execute a request just passing through the insert. So I save this. And now you'll see that every time I start up my app, it should create a new channel in the channel table. And I even don't have to wait for the authentication, so the authentication is kicking off now, but already selecting from the table, you see that it contains one new channel URI, ID URI. If I run this app again, I stop it and I start it, and I go back. You see, it's still one. So server side, I covered the fact that if it's the same URI, I don't need to register again, because I'm going to push out to it anyway, and pushing out to the same one multiple times is useless. So our app is ready to be pushed. Our server is ready to be pushed. The mobile service has been set up. Our store and our Live Connect has been configured. Everything is set up. The only thing I still need to do now is every time there's a to-do item inserted, server-side, I need to call the push notification service. So, again, same story. To-do item, script, insert. And I'm going to replace. You see, the request.execute currently just says fire the insert. I'm going to replace that by this code. And what does it do? Pretty simple. It's going to fire the execute. If the execute is successful, it's going to respond back to the user saying it's already successful. And second step is going to send notifications. The function send notifications is getting a reference to the channel table, reading from a channel table. If it was able to read it, for each channel I found, it's going to call push.wns. Push was one of the global variables we already saw. WNS, Windows Notification Service. If you want to do this with Apple, for iPhone, for iOS, you need to call the APNS, the Apple Notification Service. It's different, it's a separate one. This is only for Windows. And then you can see I added two methods. It's send tile square text one or send toast text. So I'm first going to do the toast. So I remove this. I'm going to send a toast one. So to the toast method, to the send toast, I always pass first as argument the URI, to which channel do you want to send it, and then as an argument, which text do you want to send it. So in this case, I'm just going to send the text added in the item. If it's success, I'm going to write in my log file, the push has been sent successfully. So that I can, in the last part where we look into diagnostics, we can see what happens. So I save this. And now let's hope that everything works. We start up. I need to authenticate. Remember me doesn't seem to remember me. Okay, I'm logged in. I add a new to-do. And you see that I received a notification. So I added a to-do. It's send it to my mobile service. My mobile service inserted into my table. It called the Windows notification service, and it's coming from the internet back into my application. So what does it mean? It also means that if I'm not in this application, if this application is even shut down, that I will receive these notifications. Because it's on operating system level that they will be caught and that they will be shown to the user. So pretty difficult to show because then I need two apps on a different device, but it's going through the internet. So notification service, if I want to show the tile notification, I didn't need to stop it. I can use the send tile square. The parameters are the same, the URI of the channel and the text you want to send. Save. Startup. Probably have to authenticate again. So if I now look at my tile, it just shows the title of the app, nothing more. If I now add a new to-do, you'll see that it receives that notification and it will update my tile and it will show the text of my to-do on my tile. So how many lines of code did I write? 20, 25, and I already have notifications, push notifications up and running. If I later add an iOS device, an iOS app, I can immediately hook it up. I don't need to do anything for it. If I Windows Phone 8 app, the same. So it's pretty simple to get started with, and it's working over the internet, and it's working through Windows Azure. So, final part of the presentation. What do you do when something is wrong? Which happened to me also a lot of times when I was preparing this thing. Sometimes you forget a small part doing, and then it's hard to find because it's somewhere on the cloud. You cannot access the machine, you cannot check IIS logs. So you want to know what's really happening. So what do you do then? You can use the diagnostics feature and also in the logging feature. And because it's cloud, we can of course scale this service. If we have a lot of users, we can scale our mobile service. But for the notifications, we don't need to do anything. That is scaled for us. It's managed by Microsoft, it's free for use, so they scale it up to 1 to 2 million of users, so you don't need to do anything for that yourself. But for the diagnostics, what you can see there, you can see how many times was the API called, how much CPU are you using, how much data are you sending out. For logging, if I use that console.log, like you saw in my script, it will write into the log so that I can check what happens. And of course in storage, if you want to scale, you can or scale your mobile service or you can scale your SQL server backend. So it's up to you depending on your needs. So last part of the portal, the logging part. So going back to our mobile service, you see there is a tab scale, first that one. Currently I'm in shared mode running on a small machine. Currently it's in preview, so that means that it's limited to a small machine. You cannot increase the size of the machine, it's always a small one. If you want, you can always go to reserved mode. So scaling is built in. And then on the log side, I can request my logs here, and you see that if I put the details of the first one, you see what it did is it sent a push with the following headers, status code HTTP 200, to this channel, which is the channel you will find in my channel table. So this one was success. Now let's say that I hope that I still have my app running. No, then. Let's say that I disable the notifications of my operating system. I will just disable them completely. Notifications. It's always up to the user to say what he wants. So for instance, I can say app day cannot send notifications on OS level. So I don't want to receive email and messages, but I still want to receive for instance, calendar items. You can choose it here. So let's say that I now run my app and I will try to push this notification back to my client. Then I need to change it back because it's currently using tile notifications. First, good for first demo. So login again. So, hello. Save. You see that this one still works. Why? Because it's not bothering me. Even if I'm doing a presentation, it will not show up on screen. It's my tile, so those are always allowed. But let's say that I use a toast notification. Then I go back to data, to-do item, script, insert, and I send this toast one, save. Then you will see, if I go back to this, that it doesn't work. I don't receive any notification anymore. It's going to be blocked by the operating system. So what can happen now is that, you don't know what's happening, so that's where the lock comes in. So if I go now and check the locks, you see the first one. Oh, it should. Oh, wait, I need to refresh. It should be somewhere. Strange. It. Okay, so it now gave an error. Why? Because my operating system blocked a notification. So in the details, you will see, what does it say? Windows notification service returned HTTP status code is 200, which means I received it, I was authenticated to do it, I should be able to receive it to my operating system, but the notification status value of dropped. So the notification was dropped by my machine. My machine said, I don't want this notification because in my operating system, the user said that you didn't want to receive notifications for this application. But the notification system is still working. So if notification is not working, this is the place to look. So to wrap up, how can you get started with this mobile services? It's currently in preview, like I already said. But you have 10 mobile services currently for free. They're running on shared instances. You can send unlimited data into the data center. So uploading data is free. That's always like that on any Azure service. Uploading data is always free. It's getting data outside the data center, which you have to pay for. Currently for mobile services and also for Windows Azure websites, it's limited to 165 megabytes a day, which is still 5 gigabytes a month. So, which is not that much, but after preview it will change, probably. And currently, you need to deploy it in the West, your database, because it's not going to be fast. Some small side note, it's only on small instances, and there's currently, because it's in preview, there's no service level agreement. So that means you can use it in production, but if it's not 100% working, it's not covered in the SLA, except if you really want it, you can negotiate with them to, if you have a special scenario, it's possible, but it's not going to be cheap, probably. So, how is it running? It's running on shared instances, small instances, also for reserved. If you go to reserve mode, the one I showed you, it's also small. And when it's going to be general availability, it's going to have a service level agreement of 99.9%. So what did we see? We saw a lot, but 1 hour is not a lot to show all these features. But I think we covered a lot of stuff. We saw how can you work with data? How can you manage your data server side? How can you hook up server side with adding some scripts, some validation, some extra fields. How is dynamic your schema dynamically managed on the database side? We saw authentication using Twitter, authorization saying only the users who are authenticated can do this operation on this table. We saw the logging part, we saw push notifications. So I think we saw a lot of things which you'll probably need in most or all of your mobile applications nowadays. So if you want to get started, there are a lot of tutorials available on the Windows services, the Mobile Services Developer Portal. So everything you want to know about Windows Azure is windowsazure.com, and then just go to the Develop tab and you find everything you need to know. Samples on how to build applications, how to work with push notifications, stuff like that, it's all there. The full API reference, and if you want to do iOS and Android, it's also possible. The link is also provided. So small tip, yeah, it's currently the moment to build these types of apps and try to always make your apps a little bit more sexy by supporting these types of push notifications and these types of working with data. And then, like I already said in the beginning, I've put the link in my last slide to the Meet page. If you need help on Windows Azure, on Windows 8, on anything, we have a big bunch of guys, crazy guys in Meet who are available to answer any of your questions if you want to. That was it, thank you. If there's any questions, feel free to shoot. You can always come to me afterwards if you still have more specific questions. Any question? Yes? So the question is push notification really push? Yes? It's no pull. So it means that by registering to that notification, it's indeed going to be pushed by the server to the client by using those channels. There's a direct channel between the two. How it's really technically done, I don't really know. But it's really, it's push, but how they technically implemented it, I don't know. Other questions? Oh, a lot, yes.
Can you state the entry point for the mobile service starting from a table? Is it always like this, or can you define your own entry points for your mobile service as well that are not directly connected to the phone?
How do you mean that it's always linked to a table? Yeah, true. So you mean using it without tables?
Using it without tables. Is that a possibility as well, or do you always need a table?
Well, you always need a table, but of course, if you are interested, you always can, for instance, make a table and access storage, Windows Azure storage, but always through scripting on the server side. But it's possible, you can add access Windows storage. Everything which has a REST endpoint can be called from these server side scripts. So you need one table at least to hook up to the server script, of course, but once you have that, you can do whatever you want. There was still some other question, yes?
Can I use spatial data in Zoom?
You mean SQL? I think you can, but on the mobile services, I'm afraid you currently cannot. But in SQL, yes. Yes? True. Currently, no. But yeah, it's preview. But yeah, it will probably grow. Indeed, I also I don't like typing into that editor. But yeah, it will probably come. But currently, you have to do it like this. Also, reusing script is currently not possible. We saw the global functions and the global things you can reuse. What I would like a lot is that I can create my own library with functions which I use a lot, like sending the push notifications, and I can hook it up. Currently, you cannot. But it will probably come. No other questions? Okay. Thanks a lot and enjoy the rest of your day.